Well, I'm interested in the operating side. One of the things that I really wanted to do at both Tableau and Snowflake was to get P&L experience. And now that I've gone down this path of learning and actually taken a position in Data.World, you know, as a private company investor in several different real estate syndications, I kind of get the feel for what it's like to be an investor, but also what good looks like for somebody who would want to invest.
Welcome to Managing Tech Millions, the podcast for tech professionals navigating the journey from high earners to confident wealth managers. Struggling with equity compensation decisions? Are you curious about turning your portfolio into a thriving, scalable business? You're in the right place. Master your millions, own your legacy. Join us each week as we uncover strategies, share actionable insights, and help you take charge as CEO of your financial future. Okay, welcome to Tech Careers and Money Talk. For those of you who were with us last week, you'll know that this is week number two that we're doing with Fred Dworkin. And we're super excited to be here with Fred, who is the CEO and founder of Blue Yeti. And he also spent some time in the Peace Corps down in Latin America. And he had IPOs with Tableau and also with Snowflake. I'm excited. Welcome back to the show, Fred.
Thanks for having me again, Christopher. This is amazing.
It is. And so we left everybody at this cliffhanger last time. And I think what I want you to do is you give me the moment that you had with your wife. I want to tell you mine. And then I want to sort of move through, you know, some of these emotions, because I think it's so important that people really understand this. So you went through this Tableau IPO, or not Tableau, you went through the Snowflake IPO, walk us through that again.
Well, I mean, the two moments were great. The Tableau moment, you know, they brought in a full bar in our Seattle offices at 6 a.m.
Right.
So that we could celebrate with everybody in the New York Stock Exchange floor. And full bar, I was drinking at 6 a.m. making calls. It was fantastic. And then, you know, opening up your Fidelity and looking and reveling in the numbers, it goes larger, and doing the calculation as they have the, you know, set in the book and all that stuff.
Right.
And Snowflake was the same thing. Snowflake was internally broadcast. There's a gentleman who works for Snowflake now named Ryan Green.
Right.
He was working for New York Stock Exchange, or the ICE at that moment. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of like part of the package, right? Where you get this person who goes and interviews all the execs and everything. So we're there with the execs and virtually, and watching along with this. And if I'm not mistaken, we were knee deep in the pandemic,
right?
2020 September. So, you know, it was just pre-pandemic, because everybody was, anyhow, they had it broadcast and Ryan was interviewing everybody, and you just feel giddy. And they'd already loaded everything into Fidelity. So it was, you could start seeing the price populate as the book was set and closed and everything.
Right.
So the next day, and I think it got up to 311 was the highest that it got on the first day. It may have closed.
So what was that like when all of a sudden, and I don't know, what did it come out at? Do you remember?
It was like 240 was so the final price.
Right.
And then I opened up my laptop and I go into Fidelity, and you know, there's a 7-figure number in there, and I show that to my wife, and she just looks at me just incredulously, like, what is this? Like, well, it's our Fidelity account, honey.
Well, so, you know, it's so funny. Well, it's so funny because we're both married to Latinas. So this is absolutely hilarious, because the first one was the most monumental to us, because we got super prepared for the ones that followed. But the first one was just like you. I show up at 5:30 a.m. There's, you know, omelet bar, there's DJ. And for us, we thought that we were going to go out at 17, and we didn't even end up going out till 32. So everybody had a really good number at 17, because we hadn't taken a lot of money. They'd been very generous with the shares. And my boss had actually showed me how to negotiate really hard, and I didn't realize at the time, but he had like super stoked me out. Like, I had an amazing opportunity. And then it goes out and it ends up going out at 32. I think it ends the day somewhere around 34. Same thing. I get home, I spin around the laptop. My wife's pregnant at the time, and she looks at it and she goes, okay, the numbers on the screen's great. When do we get the money?
Right.
And then when can we get the house? Cause like, I want to have these kids in a house. And I know for myself, I said, hey,
go back to sleep, babe. Like, I went into the next room and I had almost a nervous breakdown because I had no idea it, you know, and you'd said it before in the previous episode, is I had no idea how to protect that money and what to do with it.
Right.
I was questioning, like, is it real? Like, did we really get that? Like, can I, you know, all the work that goes into getting there, you know, all the sweat, the blood, the tears. And it just, it created just a ton of doubt. And I didn't realize at that time, since then I've studied it, like I was suffering from what's called sudden wealth syndrome. Happens to lottery winners and, you know, guys who go through the draft and all these things. When you have sudden wealth, is immediately a lot of your network and the things that you can talk about just gets wiped off the map because they have no idea. And I know that the few calls that I did make to, you know, family members or friends at that time were like, what are you like, why are you sad? Like, why are you upset? Like, why are you distraught? What was that like for you?
You articulated so well, and it is a, you know, sudden wealth syndrome. It's this kind of lonely place where you got to figure out how to navigate this. I knew that there was going to be some sort of big stick waiting to whack me from the IRS.
Right.
I didn't know how hard that was going to hurt.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but I knew it was coming
before.
Yep.
Yeah. Cause I think for you, you had gone through one and maybe you didn't have the weight. You'd written some checks already. So when you went through number two, that was then this much larger windfall, you know, you also have that scar tissue to deal with too. Like, okay, yeah, man, Uncle Sam is coming to work me over.
For sure. And I'd picked a different strategy and I'd gotten a CPA to help me get prepped, but I didn't have full confidence and faith in that yet.
Right.
And I come from pretty humble means.
You know,
my parents are not wealthy, either one of them. My circles, I do have several people who are wealthy in my network, but in my close friends, not that many. So it's, you know, right. It's kind of like a solitary, and my wife was in disbelief. You know,
right.
It's just like, that doesn't even exist. Like, I'm never going to, let's not approach it. let's not talk about it. So it was, broaching the conversation in certain different ways, educating myself on how to think like an investor.
Right.
And how to think in terms of, starting to diversify it into different revenue streams.
Yeah.
And I did that by starting to change my circle of people who are around me and started to change my consumption patterns in terms of information.
That's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more, like what was some of the information that you started consuming?
Well, one of the things that I've always been into was commercial real estate and understanding that commercial real estate is a pathway through depreciation and other for making considerable wealth, right?
Right.
And you can generate an income stream. So I started identifying different commercial real estate groups where I could go and learn from people. I do have a couple of close friends who were curious as well, so I kind of took them along the way. I invested in some classes as well. One of them was called Family Office Real Estate. Underwriting real estate from the perspective of a family office and all the different considerations of putting an LLC on it and things like that. And that was great. And I met some great people who I continue to be on a very cordial basis with. Some of them I consider my mentors. Because that's they've great. Helped me to underwrite deals. So just those type of things, you know, changing my scenery a little bit, actively seeking out different information to educate myself on how to think like an investor.
When did the fear and anxiety start to sort of subside for you? Or when did you start, I guess, or let me ask it sort of in the positive sense, like when did you start to feel more confident?
I guess it was kind of like a dial. Like I felt more confident as time passed.
Yeah.
And you know, you get past the first year vest and then it's a monthly vest.
Right.
And then it was like six figures a month. You know,
right.
It's almost my entire salary for a month. It was amazing. And, you know, I wanted to take all that off the table and I wanted to make sure that I was doing everything that I could to try to do it in a tax efficient manner. So as I got further into those months, I got more comfortable as time went on.
So we have to break that down because I think this is where people get stuck. This is where a lot of technology employees, because I've had hundreds of conversations with technology employees, you know, about their portfolio, about, you know, how they manage their equity. And what happens is, like anything else, our primal brain can take over.
Mm-hmm.
And so our primal brain is going to tell us to do three things: fight, flight, or freeze. Right. And I think that what people tend to do is they leave it there, they freeze. What they don't understand is it's a freeze, and I don't, I'll have to go back to my psychologist, neurologist friends, and is it freeze or is it flight, where they actually ignore it, but they tend to get incredibly overweight in single positions. There's this pattern that I've seen in I would say 80% of tech employees, where they will have 70 or 80% of their net worth in that one company's stock, or maybe both companies' stock. However, in your story, it seems like we shared the same mindset, where mine was, my strategy was exactly what you articulated, which is, how do I efficiently get this from that company's stock through the tax machine to cash? That's my first thing, is let me just move it from there. Because for me, and it goes back to that moment with my wife, that moment when she saw the faults, we were in Schwab, so she saw the false Schwab account. My thought, my imagination, I've never shared this with anyone, it was, you know what? You know what she would be more happy with is if I brought her a suitcase full of cash, right? Because then she'd be like, oh, you got the money. Like, now we can go do things. And that was my whole, when I started, you know, because I'm definitely a fighter. So I was like, okay, I got to get out of this funk. I got to get through this. My thinking was always, how do I get it from this equity to cash? Because then that's when it becomes real. I've, you know, taken it off the table, and then I can go and make investments. Was that part of your thinking? Was that
very similar? And I by no means have it all figured out. You know, that's why we're on this journey together.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
But there was a portion of it where I just needed to get the money into my control.
Yes.
Now, if I had it to do over again, I probably would have been a little bit more proactive in diversifying.
Okay.
A little bit harder.
But as far as taking the money from cash and putting it into investments.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I also think that caution was warranted.
Of course.
You know, we're talking about 2021 in Austin, Texas.
Yes.
And me trying to invest in multifamily properties and other income bearing. And there's all kinds of snake oil salesmen out there in these sponsor circles that are trying to push things so they can get fees. And if 100%. You don't understand how to get into the pro formas and how to go digging for all of the different levels of risk,
assumptions,
you can just put yourself into a position that's worthless.
It really is. And people don't understand enough that private equity real estate, it's really easy for that equity portion to collapse. It's a lot different than residential real estate. It moves a lot faster. So in 2021, right, there was so much, so many tailwinds in the market that people were thinking the money was growing on trees. So I think, to your point, you're wise to hold on to it and keep a position in cash.
So we made some, I would, you know, classify them as conservative investments.
Sure.
And also learning investments with good operators.
Yeah.
That have very good fundamentals in terms of their communications, that have the patience to pick up the phone and talk to you. That have the patience to deal with really dumb, low-level questions.
Yeah.
I felt it was very important for me to get that type of experience, because I'm an experiential person. You know, I do my fair amount of reading and prep and things like that, but it really clicks for me whenever I have the ability to go through the motions myself. So that's been what's been helpful for me.
Well, it's so important. It's so important because we all, and the one thing that's clear to me is that you're also very much of a, I want to get educated. I want to take a conservative position. And I then want to do this experiential learning, which I honestly believe with investing, the best way to invest is to put some money to work and really observe and manage and understand what that is. And then you can go and, you know, buy, hold, sell, whatever it's going to be. Do you want to continue to invest there? Do you want to change the asset class? But I feel the same way.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's think about this now. Is where are you trying to grow your knowledge today? What are some of the things that you're trying to learn about? Now, here you are, you've left Snowflake, you're starting your own business, and you know, you're on this investment path. Where's your learning?
Well, I'm interested in the operating side. Mm. One of the things that I really wanted to do at both Tableau and Snowflake was to get P&L experience.
Right.
And now that I've gone down this path of learning and actually taken a position in data.world, you know, as a and as a private company investor in several different real estate syndications, I kind of get the feel for what it's like to be an investor, but also what good looks like for what somebody would want to invest in.
Right.
And I think it's fascinating to be able to put together a company and to put people to work. I once read Atlas Shrugged when I was in the Peace Corps.
Oh, yeah. Ayn Rand. Sure.
Ayn Rand. And there's, I think it was the industrialist that Taggart winds up going out with. And he says to Taggart, of all the types of curiosity, the most underappreciated is the, or of creativity, the most underappreciated is business. Because you could be a musician and make the most beautiful song, and the people who hear it will appreciate it. And you could also be an artist and create a beautiful painting, and the people who see it will appreciate it. And those are types of creativity, but the business person will take his creativity and he'll put people to work, and those people will provide for families and they'll have more kids and things like that. And I thought that was very touching, because we never think about, you know, I did my MBA. We never think about business people as creatives. So that's what really kind of blossomed in me now with this space, to be able to imagine myself differently.
Right.
And to be creative in different ways.
Yeah. To take your skills, to take your journey. And you're right. The result of this is the creation of a business where people are working. Absolutely. I think that's beautiful.
Now in Latin America, there's lots of amazing professionals. And I've got 15 years of experience working with all these data professionals.
Wow.
And they operate at the same level as the United States, sometimes even better.
Sure.
It's more structured. There's more rote kind of education down there. So people kind of get things really, really drilled into.
Really,
them.
Yeah.
You know,
which is so important with data too, right?
Absolutely. And then there's a resourcefulness advantage to it as well, because when you're resource constrained, you become very resourceful. So yeah, Blue Yeti is basically contracting people in Buenos Aires, in Medellin, and we're pointing them at the United States.
Wow.
And we're specifically focused on people who are digital native, because that's where I've been most of the time. You know, Mercado Libre ecosystem, Rappi ecosystem. These are hypergrowth technology companies that nobody in the U.S. has ever heard of, but they're on par with Mercado Libre is the eBay of Latin America, and Rappi is Instacart and DoorDash of Latin America. So we've got talent that's got experience there. And now we're just focused on, you know, this modern data stack that is everybody's racing to generational AI. And I feel like these 15 years of operating in data have prepared me to know what good looks like from an operational perspective and where the opportunity is in this ecosystem.
Well, and I think for anybody who listened to your first episode and now, it sounds like there's this really amazing arc of, you know, somebody who had this experience in Latin America. Obviously, if you're going to volunteer and spend time somewhere and fall in love, and then you created this specialization for you that allowed you to grow these skills in the tech community, to trade that talent for equity, to now build wealth. So now you have this backstop for your family. I think that then being able to focus your creative efforts to say, now let me go create a business that allows me to really benefit that. This is one of the things that, you know, I talk to people about, which is, this is your impact moment, where I say for many people in tech, and again, this is where I like to be the investigative journalist, like, let's talk about this right now, which is, you've built the resume. You got an incredible resume. I mean, going, you know, two big Super Bowl rings. You had Tableau, you have Snowflake, but now you say, let me build a legacy. Let me go. It is the Dworkin legacy. And then it's also this legacy of love, of how do you now take some of these other countries and have them the ability to show value here in the United States. Who knows what kind of opportunities that can create.
Absolutely. And that's what it's all about. You know, that's why I truly, honestly believe, you know, Ayn Rand is controversial.
Sure.
People poo-pooed at me for even reading the book. But I found that very inspirational. The highest form of creativity is the businessman who can put people to work. I think it's a beautiful thing. And I think we should encourage more of it. And, I'll be honored to put people to work in Blue Yeti. And I have two great partners who are on this journey with me. And we're excited about it. So
that's exciting. So if you're already going to take a moment and say, what's something on your wealth journey side that, you know, you would definitely recommend for people to do that are listening?
Well, there's a lot of people out there that will slide you right into a equities portfolio.
Right.
I would say be skeptical of that, right? I mean, you don't have to be uber skeptical, but at the same time, have confidence in yourself that you can learn these things.
Yes.
And there's been a revolution in technology, starting with Charles Schwab and now with the ETFs and the ability to make very efficient, low fee portfolios that you don't have to worry about that can just grow.
That's right.
And it's not all about the bang or bust, you know.
Right.
One of the things that I had to remove from my thought pattern was my grandma and my mom were really big on like get rich quick schemes.
Right.
And lottery tickets and stuff like that. And sometimes you think you got to put all your eggs in one basket and that one's going to hit big. But the long game is diversity and being comfortable in that, and things that you don't even have to worry about, that you don't have to think about. You know, so I would say have confidence in yourself that you can learn it. It's not complicated. It's not rocket science. You know, there's tons of resources out there for you. And then, you know, just thinking of a whole bunch of little bets. Here and there,
diversification, right? Diversification. Money's made through concentration, managed and grown through diversification.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can't thank you enough, Fred. Thank you so much for spending the time having a couple episodes with us. We hope you enjoyed this, and we'll see you next week on Tech Careers and Money Talk.